All right, so we're diving into some pretty interesting material today. Specifically, this Salinas v. Stargym Restaurant Corps case from back in 2015.
Yeah, this one's out of the Southern District of New York.
Right, and it offers like a really insightful look into wage and hour law, particularly how the FLSA and the NYLL play out in a real setting.
Definitely. And I think it's particularly useful for anyone who's, really trying to grasp the nuances of legal cases and how these things actually work in practice.
Absolutely. So think of this deep dive as like a crash course in the key takeaways from Salinas v. Stargym. We're going to break down what it means for both, employers and employees.
Right. And what stands out is, especially important for someone like you who's, keen on understanding these legal issues.
Exactly. So to set the stage, the case centers around this restaurant, Fresco by Scotto, owned by Stargym Restaurant Corp. And it all started when their employees, we're talking bussers, runners, barbacks, coffee preparers,
Yeah.
they all alleged a bunch of violations.
And the court sided with them on most of those counts.
Yeah, and here's where it gets really interesting. Illegal tip credits, unpaid wages, shady uniform costs, even like a premium for long work days that wasn't paid.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here.
There is. So our mission today is to really figure out why this case matters and what we can learn from it. Like, what are the big lessons here?
I think one of the first things that jumps out is the whole tip credit issue.
Right. Like, how can an employer legally use an employee's tips to basically reduce their wages?
Well, there are specific rules they have to follow.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest is that they have to inform their employees about this tip credit system in writing.
Ah, so it's not enough to just like tell them or have it be like an unspoken understanding.
Exactly. It has to be documented and the employees have to acknowledge it. And that's where Stargym messed up. They didn't provide any written notice about this until 2012 under federal law and even later 2013 under New York law.
Wow, so they were behind on both fronts.
Yeah, and the court really didn't like that. The lack of written notice was a major red flag for them.
It makes you wonder how many other employers might be making this same mistake. Just assuming their employees know how the tip credit system works.
It's a good reminder that clear communication is essential when it comes to wages and tips.
Yeah.
And it has to be more than just verbal. It needs to be in writing.
Absolutely. Now, another issue that this case highlighted is the whole question of who actually gets to receive those tips.
Right, like who's entitled to a share of the tip pool.
Exactly, because in Fresco, by Scotto's case, it turned out that managers with supervisory power, specifically two individuals named Drill and Vasila, they were getting a cut of the tips too.
And that's a big no-no. The law is pretty clear that tips belong to the employees who are directly serving the customers, not the managers or supervisors.
So that raises a really important question. What exactly defines supervisory authority in these situations? Like, how do we determine who's a manager versus who's a regular employee for the purpose of tip pooling?
Well, courts typically look at things like whether someone has the power to hire or fire other employees. Do they set schedules? Do they discipline employees? These are all signs of supervisory authority.
So it's really about the level of control and responsibility they have over other workers.
Exactly. And if someone has that kind of authority, they're generally not entitled to participate in the tip pool.
Got it. Now let's move on to the whole issue of getting paid for all the hours you work. Because it turns out that before June 2011, Fresco by Scotto didn't even have a time clock.
Really? So how do they track employee hours?
They just relied on fixed shift schedules.
Yeah.
So basically, everyone was assumed to have worked their scheduled hours, regardless of whether they actually did or not.
Oh, well, that's asking for trouble.
Yeah, and trouble is exactly what they got because when employees claimed they weren't paid for all their hours, the court had to figure out how to determine the truth.
So how did they do that without any timekeeping records?
They ended up accepting the employees' reasonable estimates of their working hours. Like if an employee said, "Hey, lunch shifts were usually 5.5 hours," or "Saturday dinners were 8.5 hours," the court basically took their word for it.
That's pretty significant. It shows how important it is for employers to maintain accurate records of employee hours worked.
Right, because if you don't have those records, the court might just side with the employee's version of events.
Especially if those employees come across as credible and trustworthy.
Exactly. Now, even after they finally implemented a time clock in June 2011, the court still found evidence of underpayment going on, particularly on those busy Saturday nights.
Yikes. So even with a time clock in place, they were still having issues.
And on top of that, they were also messing up overtime pay. The rule is that if you work more than 40 hours a week, you're entitled to time and a half for those extra hours.
Pretty basic principle of wage and hour law.
You'd think so, but apparently Stargym wasn't always following it.
So they were kind of hitting all the wrong notes when it came to paying their employees properly.
Yeah, they were. And this next part is particularly interesting for anyone who's ever worked in a restaurant or any job that requires a uniform.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So Stargym made their employees buy specific uniform items, like ties, shirts with the restaurant logo, even those little crumb scrapers.
Oh, yeah, those things.
And under both New York and federal law, if those uniform costs bring an employee's wages below the minimum wage, it's a big problem.
Because essentially, the employer is making the employee pay to work for them.
Exactly. And since these uniform items were mandatory and non-negotiable, the court found that Stargym was unlawfully deducting those costs from their employees' paychecks.
It makes you wonder how many other seemingly small expenses employees are forced to cover that actually should be the responsibility of the employer.
Right. It's definitely something to think about. Now, have you ever worked a really long shift, like more than 10 hours in a day?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely been there.
Well, in New York, there's this thing called the spread of hours premium, which basically says that if you work more than 10 hours in a day, you're entitled to an extra hour's pay.
Interesting. So it's like a bonus for working those extra long days.
Exactly. It's meant to compensate you for the added burden of being on the clock for so long. But guess what? Stargym didn't pay this premium either.
Ugh, are we surprised at this point? They really seem to have dropped the ball on a lot of these wage and hour requirements.
They did. And this next part is really interesting from a legal standpoint. It's about the importance of credibility in court.
Okay, because obviously the facts of the case matter.
Yeah.
But how you present those facts can make a difference too.
Absolutely. So the court in Salinas v. Stargym specifically noted that the employee's testimony was credible and detailed. They even remembered specific things like the length of their shifts.
This came across as believable and trustworthy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in contrast, Anthony Scotto, who was one of the defendants, he was described as flippant, evasive, and combative on the stand.
Oh, wow. So not a good look.
Not at all. And the judge even went so far as to say that the lion's share of plaintiff's testimony was credible based on substance and demeanor.
So basically saying that the employees were more believable than the restaurant owner.
Yep. Which just goes to show you how much your behavior and honesty can matter in court. If you come across as shifty or evasive, it can really hurt your case.
Yeah, it's a reminder that litigation isn't just about the law. It's also about persuasion and presenting yourself in a favorable light.
Okay, last but not least, the court made a pretty significant finding that the violations happening before June 2011 were willful.
Meaning it wasn't just a mistake or an oversight.
Right. They saw it as a deliberate and systemic failure to follow the law. Like, they weren't even trying to comply.
And what are the implications of that?
Well, for one thing, it extended the statute of limitations to 3 years under the FLSA, which gave the employees more time to bring their claims.
So because the violations were deemed intentional, the employees had a longer window to file a lawsuit.
Precisely. So to wrap up, what are the key takeaways for you from this whole deep dive into Salinas v. Stargym?
Well, first and foremost, it's a crystal clear reminder that when it comes to tip credits, written notice is non-negotiable. Employers absolutely have to put it in writing and make sure their employees are informed.
And good record keeping is paramount for both employers and employees.
Definitely. For employers, it can protect them from potential claims. And for employees, it can be crucial if their employer's records are lacking.
And those mandatory uniforms. Unless the employer covers the cost or ensures it doesn't push wages below minimum wage, it's their responsibility, not the employees.
Right. And lastly, your credibility in court matters a lot. Being clear, consistent, and honest can make all the difference in the outcome of a case.
Absolutely. Okay. So taking a step back, this case really underscores how important it is to understand your rights as an employee and the responsibilities of employers under both federal and state labor laws.
And it's not just about these big headline-grabbing cases. Sometimes it's these smaller, more detailed disputes that really shed light on how the law works in practice.
Exactly. So here's something to think about. How do you think these same principles would apply in other industries or work environments, like beyond just restaurants? How would these wage and hour rules play out in retail or manufacturing or tech?
It's a great question and one that's worth exploring further. Because these fundamental labor laws are relevant across so many different sectors, it's definitely food for thought as you continue to navigate the legal world.
Couldn't have said it better myself.